As a consequence, the party in 1929 and into 1930 came increasingly to the conclusion that the best way to sell itself was not to accentuate the ideology of the party, not the 25 points, but rather to cultivate what we now would call the art of negative campaigning. Find out what people were unhappy about, what farmers were unhappy about, what white-collar employees were unhappy about, what small shopkeepers were unhappy about, and to take those and craft them into a program that relentlessly assaulted this corrupt Weimar system. In 1929, the NSDAP entered into a temporary alliance with the Conservative Party under Alfred Hugenberg, a press lord in Germany who owned a series of newspapers across the land. Hugenberg, like so many diplomats, statesmen, and political figures afterward, believed that he could control Hitler, use Hitler for his own conservative purposes. As a consequence, the Conservative Party in Germany and the Nazis cooperated in the so-called anti-Young campaign of 1929. Owen Young, once again an American, had come up with, along with a group of international financial experts, come up with a plan that was supposed to settle the reparations issue once and for all. The Young plan came up with a final amount and a schedule of payments for Germany in its reparations obligations. I might add parenthetically that that schedule and the amount, it was a staggering amount, far less, the German government argued, than they had feared, but still a staggering amount in terms of reparations payments. And the schedule of payments would have meant that Germans would have been paying off reparations well into the 1970s. The conservatives and the Nazis fought against the Young plan, introduced a referendum against the Young plan, and although that referendum failed, this cooperation with the conservatives gave Hitler and the NSDAP access to a conservative audience. In a way, it made the Nazis more respectable. They were cooperating with this respected old German conservative party, and they hoped it would open up the coffers of business interests close to the Conservative Party. Most important, though, was that it did, in fact, give an air of respectability to Hitler personally because of his cooperation with Hugenberg, and the NSDAP was made more respectable with conservative voters. Meanwhile, the government of Heinrich Brüning continued its stringent policy of economic retrenchment and his use of emergency decrees to pass unpopular economic legislation. The Brüning government was convinced that Germany needed to follow this policy of economic orthodoxy, reduce expenditures, drive down prices, drive down wages, and so on. This made Brüning and the Weimar government a very, very inviting target for the Nazis in their campaign, their negative campaigning. So unpopular was this package of economic legislation that Brüning had no hope of passing it through the Reichstag, the German parliament, but had to use the special clause, Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution, which allowed the chancellor to use emergency decree powers in times of dire threat to the republic, to use emergency powers to pass legislation. So Brüning passed this unpopular program of financial and economic retrenchment via emergency decree. The Nazis had a field day. With unemployment mounting by 1931, unemployment had absolutely skyrocketed. Businesses were failing on a day-to-day basis. And the Nazis entered the fall campaign of 1930, prepared with an expanding membership and a sense of confidence that its campaigning, its electoral campaigning techniques were now going to lead to a major breakthrough. Everyone anticipated that the radical parties would gain support in the elections of 1930, the first Depression-era elections in Germany. But no one was prepared for the extent of the Nazi breakthrough in September of 1930.